And Paul Ramosh with us, of course. Latest book is called The Lost Mind. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we're going to come back and talk about some police stories and ghost stories next and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Paul Ramosh with us, of course. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to wrap up our discussion about Montezuma's treasure. Then we'll get into some other ghost stories and your phone calls as well. So you think the whole tribe of the Aztecs just went north, Paul?
Well, not all of them. There were many that were killed by the conquistadors and many mixed with the Spanish. But there were... the legend states that over 1,000 porters left carrying this treasure up north. So a big, you know, a good chunk of them went up to wherever they were from.
So, but there's no estimate of how much the treasure's worth today. Could be millions, billions of dollars.
Oh, probably trillions. With the price of gold, who knows? And if there are really records and different things like that, then some of those codexes would be priceless. And it's one of the true tragedies of the Spanish conquistadors is they burned hundreds and thousands of records from the Aztecs and Mayan and any people that they conquered. They had written language, they had histories, they had all these things, and it just went up in smoke. And there's stories of the different priests watching their sacred books burning and just weeping.
Speaking of sacred books, where do we get yours?
Well, Amazon's the best place to go. I have some links. If you go to my Facebook pages, which you guys have linked on your
yes
page, there's different. I have the different Amazon links there to go there. And a lot of people are checking in tonight with me on my Lost Mind Facebook page. I have Christy from Mojave, California, and Teddy from Montreal, and Mark and Jamie from Ogden, and Terry from West Jordan. So head on over to that Facebook page and check in. I'd love to hear from everybody.
Okay. Our friend Paul Ramosh with us. We're going to take calls in a second. Let's talk a little bit more about some law enforcement ghost stories, Paul. You told us a great one last hour. How about another one?
Well, What's interesting is so you've caused me more work, George.
Uh-huh. Good.
The first time I was on, I told you some ghost stories, and we've talked about it ever since. And my wife is like, hey, you should write some of those down into a book. And so actually in a couple months here,
that's
a book
the next
of
one.
CSI police ghost stories is coming out.
Perfect. We got to get you back for that full story.
I'd love to. It's coming out the end of June, so I'd love to come on.
Oh, great.
Back in a couple months and talk about it. But probably one of an interesting story that came to me earlier, I talked about that conference where I went around to the tables and different people told me stories. This story is creepy, and it's probably extra creepy to me because it reminds me of one of the first kind of really nasty crime scenes I had seen. And I was just an intern at the time, and as an intern thinking about a job in forensic science, one of your main questions is, can I handle the gruesome scenes? You know, can I see this day in and day out and handle it and not go crazy or whatever, you know, not lose it? And so as an intern, I was really, you know, keen to see some of these things, to see if I can handle it. And so one of my first scenes was a woman who had committed suicide in a bathtub in one of our local hotels.
Oh, jeez.
And it was a horrible, horrible bloody mess. I won't go into a lot of details because I don't want to gross everybody out. But she was in the water. The water was, you know, looked just like it was mostly blood. It was just a horrible, horrible scene. And that's, you know, because it was one of my first ones, that's always kind of stayed with me. Well, at this conference, someone told me a story that, like I said, reminded me of, you know, my experience. And so the story goes is that a young family with a child about four or five years old moves into an apartment. And the child was you know, had been potty trained for a few years. There was no, you know, issues like that with his child. But all of a sudden, after having moved or after moving into this apartment, the child would start to wet the bed, had started to wet the bed. And so parents, you know, the first time, you don't try to make a big deal about it. And the second time, you know, you're thinking, oh, okay, what's going on here? And after, you know, a week or so of this, they finally, you know, sat the child down and said, look, you've been potty trained. Why are you having all these accidents? And the child said, well, I don't want to go into the bathroom at night. And the parents were like, well, why not? And the child was really kind of hesitant and, you know, really nervous to talk. But finally, she said, well, there's a woman sitting in the bathtub in red water.
Oh, geez.
And at this, the parents are like, okay. And so they're red thinking, water. Is this just a nightmare? Is this the active imagination of a child? What's going on? So the mother started to ask around, and she asked a few of the neighbors, and no one had known of anything strange that had happened there. But a lot of people had kind of come and gone really quick. It was kind of a transitory place. And finally, she went and talked to the manager and said, look, this is what my daughter said. Has anything strange happened in these apartments? And the manager was like, well, are you sure you want to know? And mom's like, yeah, my daughter's having these problems. Well, a few tenants ago, a woman had killed herself in that bathtub.
And the little kid picked it up.
Yes.
What a story.
Yeah, when I heard that, you know, I think the hair on the back of my neck stood up a little bit because in a way it gave me a flashback to that first, one of the first horrible scenes I had.
When you were compiling these stories for the next book, did you reach any specific conclusions, Paul, about what you think is happening here?
Well, that is an interesting question because I think there's multiple things happening here. And, you know, it's something that many of your guests have echoed, that I think there's multiple types of experiences. Some, I think, are restless spirits. And, you know, like the case where my friend had that ghost follow him home. But some of the instances, I think, are recorded pieces of time. It's like a snippet of time that has somehow been trapped or recorded by the energy field or the building or whatever. And one of the weirdest stories or kind of series of stories in the book coming up, the book coming up is called Fingerprints and Phantoms.
Well, that's a good title.
Hopefully invokes.
And let me put out a quick call to any law enforcement. If you have stories like what you've been hearing from Paul, call us tonight and check in with us.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
That would be
so. Hear that. But anyway, so one of the most interesting things that I don't really know what to make of, George, and maybe some of your researchers that, you know, deal specifically in ghosts would have something input, but from what I can tell, I am haunting my office right now.
You are.
I am, and it's bizarre. So there are several different stories that have happened where some of my coworkers have heard my voice clearly call their name, and I'm nowhere.
You're not there.
I'm not there at all. Like one time,
a doppelganger or something.
Well, who knows? Has part of my energy just
dissipated into something else?
Yeah, just stuck to that place, or is it a time warp, or like who knows what it is? But yeah, one of them, there was three different instances that I put in the book. One, it was late at night. One of my coworkers was back in the records room. She clearly heard my voice from behind her say, Angie. And she turned around expecting to see me.
Have you ever heard yourself there?
I haven't.
You have not.
I have not.
So they just hear you. That's weird.
Yeah. And so, yeah, what is that? And so is this one of the aspects of the haunting? If we go to the woman sitting in the red water, is that her spirit, or was that just such a traumatic moment in time that it was captured. And I think some of the guests that you've had on before have talked about, you know, recordings in the stone or something along those lines, that the stone of the building records this event. And so, you know, I think that explains part of it too. And then I also, you know, I think there's demons out there and evil spirits and things like that. And so I think the ghostly phenomenon isn't described by just one thing. I think there's multiple explanations for it.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Joan in Bozeman, Montana to get things started. Hi, Joan. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, good to
How
have
are
you with
you?
us.
It's been
Good.
years. I've been wanting to talk about some things.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My call's about the previous thing you were talking about out in the Great Basin in Utah. I grew up out there, and my father and my uncle leased Fremont Island, and they drilled wells. My father drilled a well at Promontory. And as a kid, I was running all over the place.
You ever
I got into an
stumble?
investigation, and I was Nancy Drew, and I wanted to find treasures. Well, all my research and everything, come to find out, looking for Montezuma's treasure, I was like, oh my God, it's in my backyard.
Don't tell me
This
you
was in
found
the
it.
late '70s.
You didn't
I
find it,
did find
Joni.
it.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about this. Paul, you got to jump in
Well,
on this.
I know. I got to hear all about it, Joan.
Well, before my uncle died, he came to see me, and he told me, he says, you're the one that's interested, because the Smithsonian Institute took the hieroglyphics and everything. They worshiped the phallic symbol out there. There was hundreds and thousands of phallic things out there. And he says, there's a place out there on the Sphinx. There's two Sphinxes out there. And the hieroglyphics tell you, and anyway, he told me there's a place out there, an entrance that takes you to the Hidden Valley. So there's two times I went out there. And the second time I lost 4 hours on my way from Arizona out there because I'd moved to I've had too many weird experiences that I can't get into it. Anyway, what I'm saying is it's forbidden because when I tried to get into the entrance, I heard a voice, a hollow voice saying, go away. And it was, and man, it had my mind.
Well, what
Like
makes
this.
you think the treasure was there?
It's an entrance into the Hidden Valley.
I mean, did you go in there finally?
No, I
You did
couldn't
not. But
because
how
there
do you
was
know that?
like a force. A force came out and took me.
How do you know the treasure's in there?
I believe it is because why would I there was nothing going to stop me to go in there
Could you
in this
find that
cave.
place again?
Oh yeah. I'm saying don't go out there. It's forbidden. There's aliens. I've seen them growing up out there. You know, we live on the shore of the Great Salt Lake. I've seen them. You know, I grew up out there.
You got to get some information to Paul so you can at least go out there, Paul, or get somebody to go check it out for you.
Yeah, and her story is about knowing where the treasure is and trying to get there and then not being able to or being stopped by a force or by Native Americans protecting it. That's a common theme in a lot of these stories. Some people would find these caves filled with gold or something in the Uinta Mountains or out in the desert, and they would know that area well, and they would go back into town to get horses so they could carry it, and they would come back and they couldn't find it. Even though they knew the area well, they simply could not do it. They would forget it. They would have this fog or haze come over their memory. And some people would find it and want to go back, and then they would die mysteriously. And there seems to be a supernatural protection over some of these treasures and mines in the Great Basin.
Well, look how long it took to find the Dead Sea Scrolls in those caves.
Yeah,
So who
that's
knows
right.
what's out there? But yeah, Joan, get an email to Paul through his websites and Facebook, and give him some instructions.
Yeah, but I'd love to hear about it.
Let's go west of the Rockies. John is a police officer out there in Oklahoma. Welcome to the show. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Great, sir. Thanks for serving, by the way. Appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Thanks for taking the call. Been a listener. You guys help me get through the night sometimes.
Super. Just what you were saying, Paul. What do you want to share with us, John?
Real quick, because I know there's other people talking about experiences. I'm going to share two. In the jurisdiction where I work, years ago, there was a facility for the mentally and physically handicapped, and it ended up being closed. Well, it was just called the House of Terrors. It was a horrible facility. People were mistreated. Lots of things happened there. And after it closed, it fell into disrepair. The state took it over. And eventually people started looting the place, taking anything of value, you know, even copper pipes and wires. And so a lot of times myself and my squad would end up in this big facility in the middle of the night. And people would go there and ghost hunt. There was rumors that it was haunted and all this other stuff. And I'm not going to say I don't believe in stuff like that, but, you know, sometimes you're like, yeah, whatever. This place literally felt dark. We would feel like people were darting around us and nobody else was there. Occasionally people were there. That's who we went in and found. But I'm talking about like felt like dark entities were around.
You could feel it, couldn't you?
Yes, and one of the creepiest things was they had these old steel heavy merry-go-rounds in these playgrounds, and there was nothing that should have moved those. And I actually watched one start spinning one night, and I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Feet don't fail me now.
Yes. The second thing that happened is one of our citizens that volunteers with the police department, I got to know him pretty well, and one day at an event, we were speaking about, you know, our beliefs and our faith and whether or not we believed in such stuff as ghosts and whatnot. And he started telling me that he believed that his master bedroom bathroom had a death in there, and he felt like it was a suicide.
Oh, geez.
And as I'm speaking with him, I said, wait a minute, you said you bought a house here in the town that I work in. He goes, yeah. And I said, was it on this street in this block? And he said, yeah. And I said, was it this color, this trim, and was this the kind of carpet in the room? He goes, yeah. I said, I worked that suicide.
Ugh.
And then he explained to me something that only somebody that had found evidence of such, apparently the people who cleaned up the scene did not get everything. And he told me something that only somebody that was intimate about that would have known. And that really freaked me out. And so I just wanted to share those two things with you.
I love that. Okay, be safe out there, sir. And we're going to come back and take final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Paul Rimosh is with us. Paul, when you were dealing and still do with law enforcement and they tell you some of these stories, are they scared? Are some of the officers really concerned?
You know, some of them are and some of them aren't because they're skeptical. And I was just thinking about our last caller, John. Like, he's pretty typical in that he's, you know, what did he say? Like, I don't really believe in this stuff necessarily, but this and this and this and this happened to me. And so I've seen a lot of them who kind of have that that approach to it. And there's a, not far from where I am right now, there's the Ogden City Cemetery. And it's a pretty old cemetery as far as Utah goes. And there's a story in the cemetery of a ghost named Flo. And it's funny because Flo, a lot of people who grew up around here, it was the thing that they went as high school kids, thrill-seeking, to go try to see. And it's just really part of the folklore of this area. And it fits so many similar stories that I've heard on Coast of a spirit in a cemetery that you drive up to the gravestone, you blink your lights or do a certain thing, and you might see her. And the story of her death is a little mysterious. Some people say she was killed in a car crash. Some people say she died of the Spanish flu back in the last century, and so there's kind of mystery involved around it. But a lot of people, like I said, go and try to find Flo. Well, when I was first collecting these stories, I would ask a lot of officers if they had seen Flo, because a lot of them go into the back of the cemetery to patrol or to, you know, get away to write their reports or something like that. And one officer who I knew really well said, "Well, yeah, one night I was writing my report and I looked up and I saw this purple mist kind of floating towards me, and I was like, oh, really?" And that's one of the incarnations you hear of this ghost named Flo, there'll be this mist. And he said, "Yeah, I was just looking at it, and at first I thought it was just the headlights, you know, maybe getting some mist, but there weren't any other cars around, and it was floating towards me, and it just got closer and closer, and then eventually it disappeared." And I said, well, gosh, were you scared?" And he's like, "Well, no, I don't believe in ghosts." And I'm like, "Well, you probably saw one." And I think, you know, we've talked about a little before, I don't think a lot of people in law enforcement or forensics want to believe in it, because we're supposed to be all about logic and reason and science in these things. But my problem is that people are seeing something. Like, I'm actually pretty skeptical of a lot of stories, honestly. Like, my coworkers, we our building is really noisy when the sun heats the roof, or has kind of this metal roof, and when it cools down at night, the roof pops, and, you know, be working nights and the roof will pop, and someone will be like, "Oh, it's a ghost." And I'm like, "No, that's just the roof popping." You know, I'm kind of skeptical, but, you know, some ghost stories could be explained by, you know, very, you know, everyday things. Some of them might be delusions or hallucinations, but there is a percentage of stories that you can't debunk, and you have to pay attention to them. It's intellectually dishonest just to say, "Oh, well, none of it's true," when there are stories that there's so much credibility to them. And John, the caller, referred to it as that the suicide that he investigated, the guy was talking about, because of his friend's haunting experiences, he knew details of the crime, or it wasn't a crime, it was a suicide, but he knew details of the incident that he couldn't possibly have known.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Sean in Columbus, Ohio. He's a former police officer. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, in June of 1996, I was a police officer in a very rural township department in northern Ohio, and I came out of the police station about 3:30 in the morning after having a pit stop, and I heard a strange humming noise and looked up, and coming over the ball diamond by our police station was one of those black triangles.
Well, those those triangles could be extraterrestrial. Paul, do you ever get UFO reports?
Yeah, not as much, but there have been police officers who've been out on lonely patrols. We have some pretty rural areas in our county, and I've heard some stories of strange things that they've seen. More common is Bigfoot, kind of around here with the mountains. There's been some Bigfoot stories that I've heard from officers.
I still love the story with a police officer called the show several years ago. They had a run that there was a heart attack victim. So they get to the house, and a little old man opens the door, lets them both in, and the officers see a man on his stomach lying face down. They roll him over. He's dead. It's the little old man who let them in. I mean, how do you explain those stories?
You can't. You know, like I said, there's certain things. Yeah, you can debunk certain stuff, but there's other stories that it's just intellectually dishonest to say there's nothing to them.
Let's go to Dave in Utah. First time caller for David. Hello, Dave. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm from Utah, from Wendover, Utah, and I live right on the outskirts of the salt flats.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's a cave out there that's just right, maybe half a mile from where I live. It's called Danger Cave, and like 10 years ago, they closed it off, and they found some artifacts and stuff. I was wondering if that has to do, anything has to do with the Aztecs. And also, there's arrowheads out there that you can find all the time. And also, I was wondering, I heard when I was younger that there's treasure buried out there. And I was wondering if that had anything to do with it as well.
All right, Paul, what do you think?
Well, it could be. And, you know, the promontory culture that I talked about that could potentially, scholars don't know for sure if they're connected to the Aztec, but there's so many intriguing possibilities. The promontory culture was all around out there in the Great Basin. And so it could have been related to them, or it could have been related to some of the...
I mean, they had a lot of Navajo out there, right?
The Navajo, I think, are more towards the Four Corners, if I'm not mistaken. The up here in the Great Basin, the Shoshone, the Fremont, the Paiute, the Ute, were the major tribes up here. And it's interesting. I've met some Fremont, ancient Fremonts. Every now and again, out west in our county, people will be digging in their property or out on their farms, and they'll find human remains, skulls and different things. And of course, they call the police, thinking that it's some sort of homicide scene. And it turns out that two different cases I worked on, they were ancient remains from the Fremont culture.
Somebody's got to find this treasure, though.
Gosh. I know. It would be nice.
My gosh. Who knows what it would be worth?
Well,
what if there is no treasure, though?
Well, and that's a possibility, too. I mean, it's some of these things have just a large legend component to them. People have been looking for a long time. I mean, that's definitely a possibility that it's all just legend. But there are intriguing things. There's enough stories where people have found some things or found indications of it that, I mean, I think there is something out there.
There probably is, too. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And the fact that they've talked about it for five centuries, who knows what's there, huh?
Yeah.
Martha in Santa Cruz, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Martha.
George, it's been a long time.
But you've been out there, yeah.
Yeah. Had an accident, bad one. But
you're okay. Well, you sound better. You okay?
I'm fine. You know, the lady that called about the
cave?
Valley.
Yeah.
Yes, that rang deeply with me. In the 1980s, early, my cousin here in Santa Cruz with his son found someone here in Santa Cruz who had found that area. And they said there were two miners up there who gave him directions of where this mine was, near where she was talking. So they, silly men, they went up there. And these miners said, you know, we've actually found a lot of the treasure. And they showed him some of it.
Ooh.
Now, they said, here's the map to where this valley is. They came back, they got supplies, they went back there. But what he said to my cousin was, his wife, if you don't hear from me in about 10 days, you better find me.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, guess what?
They found it.
So we didn't hear from them for 2 weeks. And my father was a very high-level investigator. And my cousin said, well, we have our helicopter ready. We want to go there and see what's going on because we have that map. And they went there, and the miners were gone. And my two cousins were upside down on a bar of wood with their throats cut.
Oh.
Yes. And on the wood pin.
Horrible.
Do not enter.
How do you explain that stuff?
We've discussed it at length, and I've even looked into some stuff. I wanted to say something to you, Paul. There is, my father felt the darkness there. He said if you could cut it with a knife,
I bet.
Feel the stillness.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm saying to you, I'm warning you, do not go in there. Don't go in there. I mean, this. I believe it wasn't the miners. The miners weren't there. They may have been killed, but I believe it is supernatural. I really do.
Does the supernatural, based on your experience, Paul, do they physically harm people like that?
Well, I mean, when it
scaring, I can understand scaring them.
When it comes to the story of these mines, these lost mines out there, there are, I mean, we've had two callers already that talked about supernatural forces, however, that were protecting these. And so many of them are considered to be cursed. And, I mean, a lot of the gold caches, and this is kind of a longer story that, you know, maybe for another time, but the Spanish, when they went up into the Great Basin looking for Montezuma's lost treasure, they enslaved a lot of the natives that were there and worked them to death in little gold mines. And so periodically the Indian slaves would revolt and kill the Spanish miners and then bury the gold that had been pulled out of these little mines in caves or hide it or whatever, and then there would be curses placed upon them. And so, you know, with the story that Martha just told us, I mean, this could be a supernatural thing, or it could be someone trying to protect the gold that they had found. I mean, there's some other explanations for this, but there are numerous, numerous stories of these gold mines being cursed.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Very quickly, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Paul. Your neighboring state, Arizona, it's got, you know, I went across this Apache Pass, and that was just bizarre. The landscape, beautiful, but it looked like another planet. And as I went down to this Cactus National Park setting at the border of Mexico, also very bizarre landscape. So I'm wondering if you have anything from that particular state, Arizona, that you could talk about.
I don't have anything specifically that was in my research. It's potentially along the old trail that the Aztec took up here and part of the Spanish trail. I know that, you know, we're talking about stuff in the Great Basin in Utah, but there are lost mines all over West and the Four Corners. And Nevada, Arizona, they're really everywhere. So I don't have any specific research about it, but I know that, you know, if you were to, you know, do some research yourself, you would definitely find similar stories there.
Have you heard about the story about the treasures at Oak Island?
You know, I'm not an expert on it, but I've seen some different documentaries and, you know, read.
There could be something there, too.
Yeah, but that don't they think that's the Templars, though?
Yes.
So that's kind of a whole different ball of wax there.
Absolutely. And what about King Solomon's treasures?
Oh, now that's a fascinating.
That's another one.
Right, because the Bible talks about the city or the area that it came from, but nobody really knows where it is. And so
I think Nicolas Cage was in a movie where the treasures were moved to some hidden area in New York or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and my first book, The Lost Stones, talks about, you know, one of the intriguing possibilities is that the King Solomon's mines were actually in the New World, that there's a connection
right.
between the New and the Old World, that they came over here to areas around Michigan and different things where they dug copper and gold and silver and all these things up. And so that's another story, but that's an extremely intriguing possibility, that New versus Old World connection.
Paul, quickly give out your Facebook if you can. We've got a link for people. I guess that's the easiest way, right?
Yeah, I'm getting lots of good comments tonight, a lot of people checking in, but it's Facebook, The Lost Mine, and I have links to the upcoming ghost book and some of my different articles
Super.
And different things on there. So that's the best way to check in.
I'm getting lots of emails from law enforcement. They think the world of you, by the way.
Oh, well, shout out to them. And I just have so much respect for anyone who, you know, straps on that gun and badge and or camera and fingerprint kit and goes out and
absolutely.
Night.
Paul, thank you. We'll talk to you when you get your new book out, Ghosts in Law Enforcement. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morris, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.